Good afternoon. We're coming your way from PNC Park. Today, the Pirates and Mets conclude the three-game series. Rubber match, Buccos and Cincinnati and New York Mets, as Joe Musgrove will go up against Noah Syndergaard. Greg Brown here in the booth with the Pirates general manager, and this might be the toughest show to do of the year because there's so much to get to, so we'll get right to it. First, Neil, the trade deadline passes. You move Corey Dickerson to the Philadelphia Phillies. Tell us about that trade first off.
Well, in Corey's situation, it's an opportunity to get Jose Osuna some at-bats here in right field. Gregory Polanco coming back from injury, a chance to clear the at-bats for guys that we plan around for 2020 or are working to plan around for 2020. Jason Martin, you may see get some at-bats at some point here, maybe September, or in case of an injury, and there are some other guys that will benefit from that. We get the opportunity to add to our spending and our investment in the international market by getting an international slot back from them. Sometimes that's misinterpreted that we get $250,000. We actually get to spend $250,000. So we get to add to our pool. We get to add to our investment in the international market. And as we walked through the market that was available, we felt that Junior Vizcaino and our guys in the international market will be able to bring us a much stronger return than maybe some of the names that we would have been able to acquire. And there's a player to be named later component, but the main factor in that trade was clearing at-bats for guys that are going to be here next year. Certainly appreciate Corey and his year plus with us. And as you look at what we gave up for him and what we're getting in return for him, it's kind of goofy that a player of that ability, we didn't give up a ton to get him. We got some opportunity, kind of lottery tickets for lack of a better term, and in the year and a half we had a very good man and a very productive player an odd situation, but it's how it worked out.
Neil, there was no thought then of trying to get him back here for an extended period of time.
Well, with Brian Reynolds taking the step forward that he did, Marte obviously continues to be a nice, solid, steady player that at times can carry a team. We do like Gregory Polanco, and as he works back through this injury, the player that we saw in September prior to the injury, the player that we saw for stretches of the time this year before that shoulder started barking, we want to continue to give him the opportunity to grow and develop. We're intrigued by, again, Jose Osuna. There's a swing change, and he's driving the ball, elevating the ball with more consistency, and is doing some good things there. And as we looked at where we are and how we best allocate the resources that we're going to have available to us, we felt that this was the right move at this time for this club and as we look forward.
And again, you say that you trade for a slot, allowing you to spend $250,000.
Correct. Yeah. So there's a ceiling there's two levels that every team in baseball goes into the international season with. They can spend X or they can spend Y. Clubs in small markets that get competitive balance B picks can spend a little bit more than everybody else in the industry, and then everybody else in the industry gets a little bit less. You can trade a certain percentage of your pool. We always look to acquire more pool, and that's just more ability to spend, more ability to invest in the international market. We do think really excited about the players that Junior and his group have brought in, and you look at that Dominican Summer League 1 and Dominican Summer League 2, and just the bodies, the frames, the athletes, the drive, the tools that these guys are bringing in. It's an exciting time, and we may not see or won't see the effect of that changeover for a handful of years still, but it's what keeps organizations rolling is a strong international, a strong draft market.
With that in mind, Neil, then one might ask, why not move Melky Cabrera to open up the outfit? And then I want to ask you, too, about a guy like Francisco Liriano, because it also frees up some money.
Well, freeing up the money wasn't the driving factor in Melky or Liriano and in Dickerson or in Jordan Lyles. In Jordan Lyles' case, gives an opportunity to Steve Brault coming back from injury, a chance to allow him to continue to build, hopefully, on the good things that he's done. Dario Agrizal and the good things that he's done. Mitch Keller at some point is going to push his way and force his way into this rotation. And so in Jordan's case, we felt like we could backfill pretty easily, and what we were sending out the door, what we were acquiring, and Cody Ponce, a right-handed pitcher that wants to start. We think there are some attributes there to start. Milwaukee moved into the pen, simplified his arsenal, and had some success this year. Former second round pick, so obviously there's some ceiling there. It's a good arm. He added a cutter this year that added to his arsenal and improved his effectiveness, both in terms of getting ground balls and strikeouts. Obviously, the return for Corey is something that we really like. There are just other situations, Brownie, where as you're looking at, are you just dumping the contract? Are you getting something of value? And then what does that mean to your club? And in Melky's case, in Liriano's case, we felt that given all factors combined, we felt that it was best to continue to have them be a part of our club. We didn't feel like Liriano or Cabrera were taking away what they were taking away from players that may be here in 2020, and who knows if they will be. But what they were taking away from players who may be here, they're also adding a significant amount in that clubhouse in terms of veteran presence, professionalism, and just some leadership for this group that is still relatively inexperienced. And we've got a large number of players that are just finishing their second to third full season in baseball, and veterans can sometimes help that maturation process go at a quicker pace.
With that in mind, then, you kind of touched on it. One would think, hey, well, if that's the case, it's going to be a young team next year. Wouldn't you want Liriano and or Cabrera on the 2020 club?
Certainly a consideration, and we'll kind of see where the rest of the season goes and where this offseason goes, where their interests lie, and how everything comes together and how the fit from our perspective and the fit from their perspective works out.
Neil, how close do you think you were to dealing Felipe Vasquez?
Well, I know we like Felipe Vasquez a lot, and we felt that given the large number of exclusions, and really key exclusions from each team, it just didn't make sense for us to move a relief pitcher that we like a lot. And I understand the criticism, if you're a bad team, a closer is a luxury. Well, we don't plan to be a bad team next year. We're going to continue to work to be one of these teams that not only goes into the deadline a few games out of first place and a few games out of a playoff spot, but comes out of the deadline and deep into September and into October in a playoff spot. And we've not done that the last handful of years here. And we as a group have got to get better. We've got to figure out a way to help our players grow, help our players stay healthy, help our players get healthy, and help them perform at levels that allow us to get back into a competitive stance and put ourselves into a postseason hunt for longer than 3 months or longer than 4 months or in some cases longer than 5 months. We've got to figure out how we do it as we've done in the past for 6 and 7 months.
Neil, I was told by someone that you received a ton of criticism. We were on the road for a comment that you made after the trade deadline passed about something to do with we are technically still in it. And my response was, what do you want him to say? Do you want him to say to everyone, it seems like there's this idea out there that they want you and other general managers, they point to, I think, a hockey GM that mentioned, well, we're out of it. Like that would satisfy everyone. And then I wonder, what would that do to the current players? Do you want them to hear the GM say that? So it boggles my mind that, and so everything would be okay if Neil Huntington says, oh, we're out of it.
Well, when you preface the question with you've received a ton of criticism for, I was trying to figure out which of the several dozen things that I'm getting criticism for. Some of them deservedly so. So you picked it that I remained optimistic about this club. And here's the reality. We've dug ourselves an incredible hole. But we do have a young team. We do have a team that needs to continue to show up and fight. And figure out a way to push more W's across the finish line and figure out a way to get from playing just well enough to lose a close game to just playing just well enough to win a close game. And we are going to continue to show up on a daily basis to grow, to develop, to build around this young core, to have some guys identify, are they going to be a key part of the 2020 club, or are they on the outside looking in, or are we going to have to go do something different? So from a winning perspective, I don't care if it was back in 2010 when we were losing 105 games. We showed up every day to win that game. And for those guys who didn't show up to win every game that day, they probably weren't here on the 2011 club. So the idea that we're out of it and it's a long hill to climb, we're focused on winning today's game. And those that want to criticize me for wanting to continue to fight to win games, I guess I just kind of leave it at that.
You also apparently were asked this question, I think from Joe Starkey on our flagship station, about the pitching and catching. Is it in a critical state And wonder if you could talk about that, especially the starting pitching where it stands.
Yeah, and my answer to the question then is the same as my answer to the question now. At the end of the first month, or I think for the majority of the first month, first 5 weeks, 6 weeks of our every Sunday show, Brownie, we talked about how are we going to get the offense to complement this pitching that's been so good, and how are we going to get the offense going? And unfortunately, we've had some injuries. I think we've lost every single one of our starting pitchers at one point in time, except Joe Musgrove, to the IL. Jameson Taillon for an extended period of time. The signs of optimism from Chris Archer last night, and really surrounding his last four or five starts, other than the one where he got knocked out early. Great to see him fight through that last night. Great to see him give us six innings in which we should win a ball game behind him. Joe Musgrove is again coming back off the offseason surgery. Those are real people. Players are never going to make excuses. Yet another thing people criticize me for is I make excuses for our players. When you lose an offseason to getting healthy, it's very different than an offseason in which you're competing to be your best and preparing to be your best, and that is real. There are players that make it look easy. Most of the players that next season after a surgery, a significant surgery, it's a challenge for them. Jameson Taillon, we're going to get some answers here sooner than later about how extensive is the surgery needed for him and how does that fix his time frame. We get Mitch Keller going again. We get a lot of these players healthy, and we've sat the majority of the season with 8 to 12 to 13 guys on the IL. The bullpen is starting to right its course a little bit. We've spent significant amounts of time without Keone Kella. Vasquez obviously has been tremendous most of the year, if not all the year. Rodriguez has had some ebbs and flows. Feliz has had some ebbs and flows. Crick has had some ebbs and flows. And as we talked most of the spring, and really any talk show that I did, any conversation I had in the offseason, most people brought up what a strength our bullpen was. And I was always a little bit uncomfortable because we've talked repeatedly that the bullpen is the toughest part of a club to build because it's the most unpredictable, it's the most volatile, and unfortunately that part of it reared its head against us this year. So why are we optimistic about the pitching? 6 weeks into this year, we were a pitching-based team that was competitive and in a playoff hunt, and unfortunately injury and some wayward performances put us into a situation where all of a sudden our offense was trying to carry us, and then at some point in time, instead of putting it together, the last 3 weeks since the All-Star break, we've gone in the opposite direction, and we haven't hit quite as well, and the pitching has continued to struggle, and that's on me. It's on the players that we as a front office, myself as the leader of that front office, have put on this field, and again, we're going to work to help these guys grow, get better, and be in a position to not only individually improve, but collectively improve as we finish this year strong and look to next year and beyond.
More with the Pirates general manager from PNC Park, Pirates Mets today on the Pirates Baseball Network.
Outdoor fun.
Welcome back to the Neil Huntington Show, Pirates and New York Mets this afternoon. And again, a lot of ground to cover in a short amount of time. We've talked about the trades. And one guy, Neil, that you probably tried to trade, perhaps anyway, Jung Ho Kang, was designated for assignment. He really struggled this year. He reworked the contract during the offseason. Hope, of course, coming into the year that he could find that magic again. Just did not happen. So he's DFA'd. Now what?
Well, now, and you're right, Jung Ho worked hard. And obviously we thought we saw signs for optimism at the end of last year to bring him back on a reworked contract. Even in spring training, as we named him our primary third baseman with Moran behind him because of the 7 home runs in spring training, because of the defense, because of the improved body comp, which led to solid defense. But unfortunately, the 2 years off or a year and a half off really from high level of competition, he couldn't knock the rust off. When he hit the ball, he hit it hard and had high end exit velocities and had high average exit velocities. And that's where you're trying to hope that you can get that back. And as we told him when we designated him for assignment, assuming he doesn't get claimed on outright waivers or assuming he clears the next step and he goes and plays regularly in the minor leagues somewhere, it's very likely that he has a chance to become a pretty good player again because he still can hit the ball hard. He's worked hard. He did everything that he needed to do off the field to put himself in a position to have success on the field. It's just a year and a half away. There was just too much rust and he couldn't make consistent contact. So what is next? He'll go through the outright waiver process. We'll get an answer here sooner than later about whether is somebody claiming him. If they claim him, they have the ability to add him to their major league club. If they don't add him to the major league club, he's in a unique situation, or a relatively rare situation for a player with his service. He can be optioned to the minor leagues. So somebody could inherit the contract. Somebody could put him on their 25. Somebody could inherit the contract, option him to the minor leagues, and then he's their player, and they could bring him up at any point in time. Obviously, we were unable to trade him, and we felt that giving those at-bats to players, in Cabrera and Liriano's situation, we felt like that situation was better to have them stay here. In Gong's situation, we felt like it was probably best for all involved to move on. If he gets claimed on outright waivers, then he's a member of that organization. If he doesn't get claimed on outright waivers, the next decision is, do you outright him or do you release him? And the new trade deadline, single trade deadline, is an interesting component, because if we were to outright him, then we technically can't trade him. He can't go anywhere else in baseball. He's ours, and he's essentially buried in our farm system, which is a unique clause under the new single trade agreement. And that's to prevent teams from outrighting players and then trading them as a way to circumvent the single deadline. So if we were to outright Jung-Ho Kang, he essentially gets buried in AAA for us, and he can't go anywhere else. So that's a part of the equation. We'll see if he gets claimed on outright waivers. If he doesn't, we'll work through the next step appropriately. But this young man worked really hard to put himself in the right spot off the field. And in one way, you wish that he'd never put himself in that position. But in the other way, with the way he carried himself the last year plus that he'd been back in the United States, and he'd been back allowed to play professional baseball, this young man carried himself really well. And in one way, you wish that he'd had some success on the field. But at the same time, it goes back to the mistakes he made off the field to put himself in that situation from the outset.
So, Neil, he can't be traded by the Pirates from this point forward then. Some players are being DFA'd. You've picked up some. And I just saw, for example, Michael Franco today was optioned down to the minor leagues. Is he tradable now that he's a minor leaguer?
He's not. As long as you are under the terms of a current major league contract, you are not tradable. So any player that we had that we've outrighted cannot be traded after July 31st. So we did. We worked really hard to place Jung-Ho Kang, and we wanted him to have an opportunity somewhere else, because we knew the next move for us was designated for assignment. So prior to the trade deadline, we worked very hard to place him and have somebody like Philly take him and option him, if nothing else. And obviously, they've just done that with Franco. So when a player is on a major league contract, once that player's major league contract remains in terms, even if he's not on a 25, he's not on a 40-man, even if he's in the minor leagues, he's an outrighted player, but his major league contract does not be broken, that player cannot be traded. He's essentially buried in that minor league system. Now, if a player is released, then he becomes eligible to sign with anybody else. But when a player is outrighted, he's still on the terms of a major league contract, even though he's not on a 25 or a 40-man roster, that player can't be traded.
So what do you think of this new rule now, after you've gone through it?
I'd like to see how this month of August plays out. I think you're seeing some of these bigger name players that have had some struggles. You're seeing them DFA'd because the club wants to move on. And if that player gets claimed on waivers, that club gets out from underneath the money, or they just don't have a fit for them, or they think so a player with less than 5 years of service but more than 3 years of service, he can declare free agency, but then he forfeits the remaining part of his contract. A player with more than 5 years of service can declare free agency, and he takes his contract and he takes his money with him. So if you see a player with more than 5 years of service designated for assignment, chances are pretty good he's either going to stay with that organization because he thinks he's going to get called back up at some point in August, September, or he wants to have a chance to help them if they're a playoff caliber club. But that player that's between 3 and 5 years, this is a tough one for them, because they make clear, because they're making X millions of dollars and no other team thinks they're worth that. But if they reject the assignment and declare free agency, that they also walk away from their money. Less than 3 years of service are Super 2 eligible. If a player hasn't been outrighted before, the player has to accept the assignment. If he's been outrighted before, he can declare free agency, but then he also leaves whatever guaranteed money he have left. So it's interesting, and again, some of the bigger names like Gong that have been DFA'd, designated for assignment, because their club's willing to move on from them for a variety of reasons, fit, performance, et cetera, that's normally, those players would go through trade waivers, and the club may or may not move on from them, but now we can no longer trade them. And so now clubs are, I think, more aggressive in making decisions that they're moving on from players that don't really fit for them anymore for a variety of reasons. If they can option the player, then Michael Franco, they option the player and they hold their depth, because you now can no longer go outside your organization to add that role player, to add a middle reliever, to add a right-handed bat off the bench, to add a pinch hitter, to add a pinch runner. You can no longer go outside your organization, or if you do, it's a very, very, very shallow pool of pure minor leaguers or players that have been released earlier this year or players that are on minor league free agent contracts that have not been promoted to the big leagues this year. So it's a very shallow pool you're pulling from.
Very interesting stuff. We'll continue with the Pirates GM next on the Pirates Baseball Network. We spent a lot of time talking about the new trade deadline and deals that were and were not made. And how about, Neil, the fight on Tuesday night in Cincinnati and all the suspensions? What were your thoughts about what transpired?
Like nothing I'd really ever been a part of. I'm sure there are worse brawls in the past. That one was as bad as I can remember. And the suspensions were severe. We voiced our thoughts and opinions to Major League Baseball about the length and duration for our club and for the Reds. You know, the toughest part is to hear the accusations that we teach, condone, and say, throwing at the head. And you and I have talked about it several times on the show, Brownie. There's nothing further from the truth. We do not teach, condone, or celebrate throwing at the head. There's about 10,000 more pitches at the top of the strike zone and above this year because of the new pitching philosophy of throwing up in the strike zone. And there's a certain percentage of those, say it's 10%, that means there's 1,000 more pitches by accident near hitters' heads this year. Hitters also tend to dive more. And I'm not saying this is what Cincinnati did. I'm just giving some generic. Hitters tend to dive more. And so there are a lot more pitches that are going near hitters' heads. I can tell you without hesitation that the Pirates do not teach throwing at the head. We do teach pitching inside aggressively, and when you combine that with some hitters diving, there are some pitches that do end up hitting batters. But I can go on record, we do not teach, condone, or celebrate pitches that go at hitters' heads. Because there's no place in the game for that, and when hitters, when pitchers have thrown at our hitters' heads, it's not something that we take lightly. Also, if you look at it factually, as our guys have, the same number of pitches have gone up and into Reds hitters from the Cardinals, Cubs, and Brewers this year. So it was not the Pittsburgh Pirates type of situation. And even with the Cubs, when Madden accused us of headhunting, I think the Cubs threw as many, if not more, pitches up and in against our hitters than our pitchers did to them. So it's a product of the environment and whatever reason or reputation is out there that we do this. I can say unequivocally we do not. So it's false there. I have respect for David Bell and his feelings and his opinion. It's just not fact-based in our minds.
And really an unfair reputation. And I'm literally handing Neil Huntington my telephone because I tweeted this out, a sequence on Wednesday night in the top of the sixth inning. And not to get in a little spat here about the whole situation, but Lucas Sims, the sequence, throws a slider away to Starling Marte. The next pitch is a fastball up and in, probably the exact location of the fastball on the other side of the plate to Derek Dietrich, but it goes unnoticed. And I guess the bother I have, Neil, is that other media outlets nationally have picked up this siren from guys like David Bell and Joe Maddon, and so they just kind of pile on and assume without looking at facts about the Pirates. That's what I find incredibly unfair.
Well, and even if you look at the facts of our situation with the Reds this year, Francisco Cervelli gets hit in the hand on opening day. Never a thought in my mind that Sonny Gray hit him intentionally. Clay Holmes hits Eugenio Suarez in the hand. And again, I respect that Eugenio's sensitive to it because he was hit the year prior by us trying to go inside. That is where you have to pitch Suarez, is you've got to be able to get him off the plate. Otherwise, he'll just bury you to right center field and left center field all day long. I'm watching Noah Syndergaard here getting loose. There are times Noah Syndergaard comes inside with intent. It's not just for a strike. And there are times where they want to go inside for a strike and they miss in. I'm trying to remember, one of our hitters gets hit with a fastball up and in. Melky Cabrera gets smoked with a fastball in his armpit area. And then the next time a Reds hitter is hit, it hasn't been with a fastball. And obviously they squared up Starling Marte, his next at bat, in the backside with a fastball. So even if you're keeping score this year, there's three Pirates hitters hit by fastballs and one Reds hitter hit by a fastball. Again, Archer did what he did. Keone did what he did. They both took their suspensions. But this narrative that we do this intentionally is just a false narrative. It's absolutely false. You and I have talked about it for years. We do not condone throwing at the head. As a matter of fact, we walk our guys away from that. And if we're going to throw up, we go up. If we're going to go in, it's not going to. We're trying not to leave it up and in. But you guys see it every single night. There are times where a pitcher's trying to go up and he yanks it down and away. The same way there are times where you're trying to go up and you leave it arm side. And it does get too close to the head, but it's not intentional.
We'll finish up with the Pirates general manager from PNC Park here on the Pirates Baseball Network. We're back. We have a couple of minutes left. And, Neil, we touched on this early on, but now with 2 months left and the Pirates, for all intents and purposes, out of the race, other than good for the mind and psyche, what good is winning? I don't mean to be flippant by that question, because we have seen when you lose a lot of games, you can, of course, move up in the draft order the following year.
Yeah, and the whole tanking thing also gets an exaggerated narrative out there about teams that are trying to lose intentionally, and we are certainly not one of those. We like this core. We need our players to continue to grow and develop. We need to continue to help them grow and develop. And if we're doing that at a good pace and our players are growing and developing, then we should put ourselves in position to win games. And the last thing we want to do is then pull the plug and lose games. Winning breeds winning. We certainly understand that. And we're trying to working to set the expectation level for our players that these games are meaningful for us. And we want to win ball games. And if it means we move back in the draft status by three or four spots or by four or five spots, then so be it, because we need to build and help these guys grow and understand that we can be better next year and that we will work to be better next year. And that's the mindset behind it.
Well, we look forward to talking to you next Sunday, Neil. We've got a lot of questions about some minor leaguers. We'll touch on that next Sunday.
Absolutely, Brownie.